Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast.
We are one church that meets in various locations across Greater Manchester.
For more information about who we are or where we meet,
please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
Has anyone ever seen the film called The Perfect Storm? Anyone? Hands up. One or two people have seen the film, The Perfect Storm. I think we've got the picture of the film up here. It's based on a true story of a fishing boat called the Andrea Gale, which was caught in a hurricane in 1991 off the coast of America in the Atlantic. Now, normally hurricanes off the coast of America given names. I mean, storms of all type get given names these days, but back then, hurricanes would always be given a name, you know, like Hurricane Bob, Hurricane Katrina, that kind of thing. For some reason, this storm wasn't given a name back then, which made some people actually call it, because it was so big, so humongous, this storm back in 1991, they started calling it the storm of the century. But then another name started to take precedence of what they called this storm, and they started to call it the perfect storm, because it was just so big, so ferocious, okay? So you got this crew of this fishing boat, the Andrea Gale, caught in the midst of this storm. Now, the film about it was a big success, box office success. They originally wanted to get Harrison Ford to play the role of the ship's captain, but he said no. Then they tried to get Nicolas Cage, and he said he didn't fancy it either. And then they asked Mel Gibson. He wanted too much money. So basically, they settled on George Clooney. So it's one of his early kind of Hollywood films that helped make him big on Hollywood. It was nominated for 2 Oscars, but unfortunately, it came out the same year as another film, Gladiator. And Gladiator basically won everything, which meant it missed out on its Oscars. But a great film. I mean, if you've seen it, I mean, it's proper edge of your seat kind of stuff. Hands over your eyes as you see, like, the next humongous wave about to hit the ship. And, like, what are they going to do? Are they going to get over it? Are they not? Really, really gripping story about the crew of this ship trying to get through this absolutely humongous storm. Now, the reality is most of us will probably never find ourselves in a storm like that. Whenever I get the ferry from Liverpool to Belfast, whenever there's like a whiff of wind, they cancel it, you know? So, like, that's the only time I'm ever on a boat. So it's very unlikely I'm ever going to be caught in a storm like that. But what these guys experienced on this boat does have parallels in all of our lives. Because we all, from time to time, do face hardships in life that are a lot like, well, being in a storm. You know, sometimes things hit us in life. You know, they just hit us and they knock us for 6. You know, it could be a difficult time at work. It could be a diagnosis that we weren't expecting. It could be health struggles, mental health struggles. It could be family conflict. It could be relationship breakdown. It could be the death of a loved one. You know, all of these things can kind of hit us in life and just make us feel like, I'm just trying to keep my head above the water. It can make us feel like we're in a storm, really. It can make us feel like that. And when storms like this hit our lives, it's important for us to know how to respond when these storms hit us. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about how to respond well to the storms of life. And the passage we're going to look at today is the whole of chapter 27, and then we're going to look at chapter 28, verses 1 to 10 as well, which is basically a story of someone else finding themselves on a boat in a massive storm. And that someone else was the Apostle Paul. He found himself on a boat in the midst of a huge storm on the way from Israel to Rome. And we're going to look at how he responded to being in the midst of that storm. And actually, we can draw out some really helpful things about how he responded and how we can respond when we get into the storms of life. So you might be sitting here thinking, you know what, life's hunky-dory for me right now. And that's good, but chances are it won't be forever. You know, storms do come and go in our lives. So this might be one of those preaches that you kind of bank and come back to at a later time when actually you need to draw on some of this stuff. So This morning is the second last in our Acts sermon series entitled To the Ends of the Earth. We have been doing this series since the dawn of time. It feels like we have been going through Acts forever. Not quite forever, but it has been a long time. Next week is the last one in the series. Okay, so this week is the penultimate one. So where are we up to so far? Bit of a bringing us up to speed. So basically, in the part of Acts we're in, Paul has been doing his thing. He's been planting churches. He's been preaching the gospel. Then he senses God wants him to return to Jerusalem. And Tom talked about that last week. And basically, everyone who's everyone in his life basically brings prophetic words to him saying, Paul, don't go. They're going to kill you if you go there. Don't go. Don't go. Don't go. And it's quite interesting because Paul ignores them all and goes anyway. And he goes to Jerusalem, goes back to Jerusalem, and he preaches. He preaches the gospel. It stirs people up. Some kind of, you know, troublemakers get in amongst the crowd who Paul's preaching to, stirs up the crowd against him, and then they attack Paul. Now, the Roman soldiers come into the crowd and arrest Paul. I say arrest Paul. It's like arresting him slash rescuing him. Because if they don't arrest him there and then, he's going to get killed. And this is them arresting him, a depiction of them arresting Paul from this crowd. Now, then he gets taken to all the, basically the big wigs of Jerusalem. He gets taken to the Sanhedrin, the top religious leaders. He gets taken to the governor of Israel at the time. He gets taken to the king of Israel at the time. He gets taken to all these big leaders, and he gets to basically share his testimony with them because they're all really intrigued. Who is this guy who completely just turns Israel on its head every time he shows up? What is this thing he believes? So he gets to share with all these people why he's a Christian and shares the gospel. And then, after that, he appeals to have his case heard by Caesar himself in Rome, which was the right of any Roman citizen, which is what Paul was. So as a Roman citizen, he said, okay, you've appealed to Caesar. To Caesar, you must go. So he gets stuck on a boat, and he gets sent to Rome. Now, he gets stuck in this boat. There are 275 other people on this ship, as well as Paul. He's not the only one on there. There's lots of other prisoners. There's a guy called Julius. He's the centurion who's basically in charge of the prisoners. Then there's the captain of the ship. He's also on there. He's the one, you know, sailing the thing. There's the ship's owner is also on the ship. Make sure nothing happens to it. And then you've got the crew. The crew are actually, you know, helping the captain to sail the thing. That's all the people on the ship. So they set sail. They stop at lots of different points along the journey in the Mediterranean. And they eventually arrive on an island called Crete. And they arrive at this little kind of harbor, this little kind of town called Fair Havens in Crete. Now, by this stage, they'd pushed through some pretty difficult weather up to this point. Because it was, at this point, it was already past the time when sailing was considered acceptable. So back in ancient times, basically, if you sailed in ancient times, what you do was, if you're sailing in the ocean, you try and hug the coastline. You didn't want to go too far into the open sea because the boats weren't that big. And the other thing you definitely didn't do back then was you definitely didn't sail in winter. Okay, so everyone basically was like, look, once you get past like mid-September, you really shouldn't be sailing. Okay, it's starting to get too dangerous to sail. Once you get to mid-November, basically sailing stopped completely until mid-March back in ancient times. Okay, so no sailing mid-November to mid-March. After mid-September, people are like, you really need to be holding back. You need to think very seriously if you're going to set sail. Because it was winter, and winter was much more dangerous. There was more storms, there was more wind. Now, at the point we're talking about here of Paul's journey, they've arrived in Crete, it's now mid-October. Okay, so it's not like the point where everyone's like, no more sailing, but it's definitely well past the point where people are thinking it's safe to sail, okay? And that's probably why, at this point, Paul warns Julius, the centurion in charge, and all the other officers of the danger of continuing. And he says in chapter 27, verse 10, I'm not going to read the whole passage, I'm just going to pull out some verses, but he says in verse 10 of chapter 27, he says this, men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to ship and cargo and to our own lives also. So that's the advice Paul gives Julius and the other officers. And what do? They ignore it. They ignore his advice, and they try to get to a better harbor for winter. So they set sail again, again, hugging the coast. But as we see in the passage, that decision proves disastrous. Because as they're sailing along the coast, this huge storm, this huge, really strong wind comes off the island of Crete and just basically just carries them out to sea. And there's nothing they can do. There's nothing they can do. They just get dragged out into the middle of the Mediterranean. And basically, they're just in a fight for survival. Lost complete control of the ship. Don't know where they are, where they're going. So they start to chuck all their equipment and cargo overboard. They tie ropes under the ship to hold it together and basically just hope for the best. And for 14 days, they're in the midst of this big storm in the midst of the Mediterranean. Severe, severe weather on the open sea. Basically, all seemed lost. They just didn't know when they were going to hit rocks. They didn't know when they were going to do it. It was completely lost. Things were so desperate that the sailors, the guys who were supposed to be, you know, sailing the ship, tried to escape in the lifeboat, which, like, in the midst of a storm, in the middle of the Mediterranean, is suicide. It really is. But that's how desperate the situation was. And then Paul reminds them, in the midst of the ship, Paul kind of stands up in the midst of it all, and he reminds them, there's a little bit of I told you so here. So Paul's a little bit like, I didn't warn you about this. So there's a little bit of I told you so from Paul in verse 22. But then he offers them some encouragement and some hope in the midst of this situation. He says this in verse 22 of chapter 27. It'll appear on the screen, or you can follow in your Bibles. Paul says this, "But now I urge you to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost. Only the ship will be destroyed. Last night, an angel of God, to whom I belong and whom I serve, stood beside me and said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar. And God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep up your courage, man, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island.'" And when Paul shared that, it encouraged everyone. We're like, okay, great. There's this holy man of God here. He's had a vision from God. He says we're all going to survive. Okay, that's good. That can't be bad news. Soon after this, they spot some land, which everyone is overjoyed about, and the ship runs aground close to the shore. The waves start smashing the ship to bits, and Julius, the guy in charge, instructs everyone, look, swim the short distance from the ship to shore, which they do. And just as Paul prophesied, everyone survives the shipwreck, arriving safely on an island called Malta. Anyone been to Malta on their holidays? Yes. Apparently, very nice place to visit. I'm just saying, I'm not being paid by the Maltese tourism industry or anything, but apparently it's a lovely place. Yeah. So they arrived on Malta, and they ended up staying on Malta for 3 months. They got to know the local people. Paul eventually ended up healing the father of the kind of chief official on the island, and obviously word got around. Wow, gosh, this guy prays to Jesus and people get healed. Loads of people came to him. Loads of people got healed eventually. And I'm sure probably Paul shared the gospel. People probably got saved as well. We don't read about that in the passage, but I'm sure that happened as well. And then after 3 months, they continued their journey to Rome. Now, that's the whistle-stop tour of like a chapter and a half of Acts. Now, it all turned out well in the end, but it must have been an absolutely terrifying experience. You know, being completely helpless in the middle of a huge storm for such a long time and not knowing what was going to happen. It must have been an absolutely terrible, terrible situation. Now, what I, in my nerdy state, find a little bit interesting is the amount of verses that are devoted to this journey. 44 verses are devoted from Paul's journey from Israel to Malta, okay? That's more verses than's devoted to the day of Pentecost. You know, there's longer spent talking about this than the Council of Jerusalem. There's longer spent talking about this than all Paul's 3 years in Ephesus. There's more spent talking about this than loads of stuff in the Bible. I mean, and in fact, the journey from Malta to Rome, only 4 verses talks about that journey, yet this one, 44 verses. And in fact, it's the most detailed account of ancient seamanship in any classical work. these 44 verses. So I have really enjoyed like nerding out, learning like nautical terms and seamen terms and all these kind of things this week, which I'm not going to share with you. You can go and read about that yourself. But it's really interesting that we have such a long account of a ship, of this journey and the shipwreck and everything. And it makes me wonder, like, why has Luke included this here? Why has he shared such a long account for us? Okay, yes, it's interesting, but what's it here for? Now, some people speculate it's because he wanted to show how God was looking after Paul and was making sure he got to where, you know, his plan was Paul to get to Rome, and he was making sure no matter what happened, he was going to get him there. Some people say it could be like a metaphor for salvation. You know, you want to be in the ship, you know, Jesus is going to save everyone in the ship. We don't know. We don't know why such a detailed account has been included. But what it does show us is it shows us some great ways to respond when you find yourself in a storm in life. And that's just what I want to share. I just want to share a few of the things that this story helps us to see and how to respond to storms in life. And the first thing I think it helps us to see is one of the best things you can do when a storm comes your way in life is to listen to the right people. Listen to the right people. Now, Grace, my daughter, hurt herself. She's 4. She hurt herself the other day, and she looked over to Max, her big brother, and Max just went, and then she looked at him again and went, no, 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 you know, as she's crying her eyes out. And Elizabeth said, Grace, don't listen to him. Listen to me. You're okay. So, like, we all know instinctively that when we go through hard times, there are the wrong people to listen to, and there are the right people to listen to, okay? And it's about listening to the right people. You know, in the story we have here, Julius, the centurion in charge, didn't listen to Paul, but instead listened to others, and the result was disastrous. He listened to the wrong people instead of the right person, though soon he realized Paul was the right person to listen to. And when he started to realize Paul was the right person to listen to and got others to listen to Paul as well, things started getting better. You know, when they listened to Paul's vision about what God was saying, everyone's going to be saved, everyone was encouraged, you know. When they listened to Paul when he said, don't let those soldiers leave in that lifeboat or they're going to die, when they listened to that and said, no, sailors, get back on the ship, that saved their lives, you know. When they listened to Paul when he said to them in the passage, which I didn't actually mention, but he said to them a point in the passage, he says, look, eat some food. When they listened to him and did that, they were encouraged. They were revived. When they listened to Paul, the situation didn't change, but what did change is their perspective. Their perspective changed when they listened to the right person. And that's often what happens when we listen to the right people. The problem may not change, but our perspective on it changes. Now, 6 months ago, I had a whole bunch of problems that ended up on my plate that I sort of had to try and resolve. Just one of those. You know, sometimes you have one problem to deal with in life, and then sometimes it just happens to be six. And it's just like, what do I do, you know? And I remember chatting to someone, I chatted it through with them, and they talked to me, and I listened to them, and you know, they were just the right person to listen to. They were just the right person to listen to. And it was like a 20-minute phone call, and after that 20-minute phone call, totally changed my perspective. You know, beforehand, I'm like, oh, I've got all these things to deal with. I don't know what to do. I'm bewildered. I'm just like, And then after the phone call, I had resolve, and I had encouragement, and I knew what I needed to do. And that is one of the things that happens when we listen to the right people. So who are the right people to listen to? Okay. Do you think you're one of the right people to listen to? Are we all like looking at ourselves thinking, oh yeah, I am. I would be good to listen to. Yes. We tend to do that, don't we? We tend to make ourselves the hero in the story, don't we? Yes. Maybe you are. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. But anyway, if we look at the passage, you know, who are the right people to listen to? Well, I mean, it's kind of got three things here. The right people to listen to are people with practical wisdom, So Paul shared some practical wisdom here. He's like, look, it's mid-October. We shouldn't sail. That's practical wisdom. I don't think that was God, you know, miraculously telling him that. Second thing in terms of people we should listen to is people who point us to God. You know, Paul's like, look, I have faith in God. This is going to turn out all right. Okay, he was pointing people to God. And the third thing when it comes to people who we should listen to is people who help us hear from God. So Paul heard this vision and he shared that with everyone. So who are the right people to listen to? People with some practical wisdom that may come with age, it may not. People with practical wisdom, people who point us to God, and people who help us hear from God. Now, a few years ago, I had a bit of a tough pastoral situation I was having to deal with. And it was difficult. And I chatted to another kind of more experienced pastor about it. And he offered me some practical wisdom. Here's some tips on how to improve this situation. Really helpful. But he also brought God into the conversation. You know, he also brought God in and said, look, here's what I feel God might be saying about this particular situation, or here's what I've been praying for about this particular situation. So there was that practical wisdom, but there was pointing me to God as well, and there was hearing from God and helping me hear from God in the situation as well. Now, his advice didn't change the situation, but again, it changed my perspective. It encouraged me, it gave me confidence, it gave me resolve to keep going, which is exactly the effect Paul's advice had on this ship. So I think that's the first thing I want us to see real simply from this story about how to respond when the storms hit our lives. Listen to the right people, okay? I haven't focused a whole lot on not listening to the wrong people, but I'm just gonna assume you kind of get that, all right? Is that, well, it's a fair assumption to make? Okay, maybe not, but I don't have time. I'm going to move on anyway. I'm going to try and keep it positive today. So the second thing I just want to share this morning from this story about how to respond when storms hit our lives is to make the most of where the storm takes you. Make the most of where the storm takes you. Now, this storm took Paul to Malta, all right? Not the worst place in the world, but I mean, Paul may not have ever even heard of Malta before. I don't know. I mean, he may just have been like, this is some island. I have never heard of it before. Now, Paul wasn't intending on going to Malta, but that's where the storm took him. And what he did was he made the most of it while he was there. You know, he healed the ill father of the chief official of Malta. He healed many others too. And, you know, lots of people would have saw that and they would have been astounded. And they're like, you know, how has this happened? And Paul, I'm sure, would have explained the gospel, and people may have got saved. We're not told that in the passage, but that's probably what happened. And you know, sometimes in life, a particular storm or tough time can take you somewhere you never thought you'd end up. But even so, it's important to make the most of where it takes you. Now, my brother, some of you know, has bipolar. And he had a big storm in his life about 10 years ago, a time when he was really seriously ill and he had to go to hospital. And that storm took him to places he never would have been to otherwise. Literally, places he never would have been to otherwise. And he met people he never would have met otherwise as well. Now, what's interesting is when he was recovering, when he was coming through that, lots of people encouraged him to, you know, put this experience behind you, you know, get better, move on, kind of forget about it, which is, you know, well-meaning advice. But my brother was a little bit like, no, I'm going to make the most of where this storm has brought me. So he actually got a job helping others through the same experiences, the mental health support worker, the same experiences he'd been through. And then he ended up writing a book about it, which he brought out, he got published, keeps getting emails from people all over the world, basically, who say, oh, I've got bipolar too, I've read your book, it's so helpful. Now, my brother hasn't stayed in that place. You know, he's moved on, just like Paul eventually moved from Malta on to Rome. But what he did do was he made the most of where the storm took him. He helped a lot of people in the midst of that storm. Anyone remember the Chilean mining disaster of 2010? Remember that? 33 Chilean miners were trapped, I think it was 2,000 feet underground because there was an explosion above their heads and meant they couldn't get out. And it started this huge rescue. It was all over the news. And eventually, after 69 days, all 33 of them were rescued. Now, one of the miners, a guy called Jose Gonzalez, was a Christian. And he made the most of the situation. And he basically said, look, you guys, we're not got much to do down here. How about we start a prayer meeting? So they were like, oh, whatever, man. So they did. Every day at noon, 12 o'clock, he got them in one big prayer meeting, all 33 of them praying. And he got them praying, and he said, look, you know, those first few times we prayed, look, we basically prayed very simple prayers. Look, we're not the best men here. We've all sinned. We've all done wrong. But God, you're our hope. You're the one we need. And they prayed, every single day. At noon, they kept praying. And after a while of doing this, he said, you know, I started to see changes in the men, you know, changes in their attitude, changes in the friendship in the group, changes in the unity. Like, things were starting to really improve. And he kept praying with, and he kept praying for the rest of the men, not just at noon, but at other times of the day. And he kept sharing with them how God was their hope in this dire situation. And he kept doing that and kept doing that. And look, to cut a long story short, by the time they were rescued, he'd led 22 of the 33 to Christ. Okay? That's, you know, that's a guy who never imagined he will be stuck down a mine 2,000 feet below and not be able to get out. But hey, he made the most of the situation he was put in. He made the most of the storm he found himself in. Now, as terrible as their situation was, all right, the Chilean miners, they did have each other, you know. They weren't alone. You know, they were going through this whole thing together. And that's the same thing with the people on Paul's ship. You know, it was a terrible thing, but they had each other. I think what makes it harder when going through a storm in life is when we feel like we're going through it on our own. And sometimes we have those. You know, we're going through something and you're just like, I just don't think anybody else understands what I'm going through right now. And, you know, my brother had that. There was no one else in his family or his friendship group who could understand what it was like to go through what he went through, because they never had. They'd never had anything remotely like what he'd been through. And that's often what life's storms can be like. They can feel lonely. They can feel like very isolating experiences. And I think those are the worst types of storms, when you really feel you're going through it on your own. There's no one going through it with you. And I think that is why community is so important when we go through the storms of life. I mean, that's why Alcoholics Anonymous is so successful, because they create a community. They create a support network for struggling people. And that's why the church is so important, too, when we go through the storms of life. So important for our church, have our church family next to us when we're going through those storms of life. So I just want to say, let's make the most of where the storms of life take us, but let's also make the most of the church in the midst of those storms. Let's make the most of our brothers and sisters in Christ when we're in the midst of those storms. Let's reach out. Let's admit we're struggling when we're struggling. Let's not suffer in silence. Let's ask for help. Let's receive help. Let's get people around us. And that's what the church is about. That's what the church is for. You know, I was chatting to someone who was going through a tough time a while ago. I was struggling, and chatting to them, and then a few weeks later, I was chatting to this person's husband, this lady's husband, and I was just saying, look, you know, how's your wife doing, and how are things going? And he was saying, you know, yeah, it's a tough time. But then he began telling me all the people in church who've kind of caught up with his wife and said nice things to her and helped her and been there for her. And I was like, okay, that's good. And he kept telling me all these people, yeah, met with them. And then I said, hey, look, do you need me to do anything to help? And he was like, no, I think we're all good. And I was like, I'm not at all put out by that at all. But what I took from that was that that's such a beautiful thing. It's the fact that the church is helping someone in the midst of a storm. That is what the church is for. And it was doing its job. And it was a great thing to see. So much so that I wasn't needed. They didn't need me which is great, which is such a good thing. So that's making the most of the storms of life. Now, just as I come in to finish, Malta is interesting. I don't know, maybe those of you been on holiday have found this out, but Malta has had a strong Christian presence ever since Paul's visit. And it still does to this day, 2,000 years later. There's churches all over the place. Now, why is that? Well, that's because someone made the most of where the storm took them in life. So when storms come our way in life, let's do what? Let's make the most of where they take us. And let's listen to who? The right people, yeah. Let's listen to the right people. And the best person we can listen to is who? It's always the same answer. Jesus. Yes, Sunday school answer. Yes. The best person we listen to is Jesus. And he says in John 16:33, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. Jesus has overcome. He has overcome all the storms this life can throw at us. He has overcome sickness. He has overcome all sin. He has overcome death. He has overcome all of them through the cross. And he will return one day to complete his victory and completely vanquish darkness and evil and sin and suffering. It will be gone once and for all. And the best way to respond to Jesus is to listen to him. To do what he says. To put our trust in him so we can be forgiven, so we can have a future with him in it forever in that new, redeemed, perfected creation, which Revelation 21 tells us isn't going to have any storms in it. And I, for one, am going to be making the most of that whenever I get there. And I hope you are too. I'm going to make the most of that. So that's the hope we have. That's the hope we have in the midst of those storms, that God is going to get rid of them one day, completely, absolutely. But until that day comes, how we respond is, remind me, how do we respond? We listen to the right people, and we make the most of where the storm takes us.
Thanks for listening.
To explore this sermon or learn more about our church, please navigate to the links provided in this podcast description.
From there, you can connect with us on social media. And you're welcome to check out the music links featured in this episode from our very own musicians.
You can also discover current events and information about where we meet on Sundays and various groups or community projects that you can join in with.
If you're interested in knowing more about us or wish to join us for one of our meetings, please reach out.
Simply drop us an email at hello@ccm.org.uk.
We look forward to connecting with you.